A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 4, 2001, in the series Spirituality in the Modern World, entitled Worldview, Room for God? Texts for the sermon are Psalm 16, verses 5 through 11, and Luke 17, verses 20 and 21. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
Last week in sunny Naples, Nancy and I invited a couple Christ Community members to go to breakfast with us. And the breakfast had to be a later breakfast, which I prefer anyway. But because the gentleman had to attend his regular Tuesday morning Bible study group. I get a little nervous when my people get under other tutelage, but nonetheless, what can one do? So we gathered at this lovely restaurant and got settled down, gave our order, and she looked at him and she said, "Are you going to ask him the question?" And he said, "Oh, yes." He said, "The earthquake in India. Where was God?" Obviously, it had been a topic of conversation in the Bible study, but I wouldn't be surprised that even apart from the Bible study, it had crossed his mind, as it has crossed probably all minds who think seriously about such things and wonder, and who are moved by the deep tragedy and the devastation that can so quickly come into the lives of so many, thousands and thousands killed. And so there we were, just the four of us, and the question was posed. And I knew that either I would have to do as pastors usually do and fudge, or I'd have to be honest. And I said to him, "God doesn't have anything to do with earthquakes." And this was not one of those intense existential moments, of course. It was a moment in which it was not difficult for me to be candid. But what I said to him, I do believe. And that is that if you want to know about earthquakes, you have to go to the geologist and you have to study the formations of the earth and all of that that makes up the cosmic reality of which we are a part, this material universe on which we dwell. You don't go to the Bible to learn about earthquakes, the why or the wherefore of them. And so, having said that word, I had to smile to myself, because I had just been reading John Hicks' The Fifth Dimension, which is the book I was going to use on Tuesday evenings. It happens to be out of print, although it was only published last year. It's been a very popular book, apparently. And I had just been reading it again. And in the early pages of Hicks' The Fifth Dimension, which speaks about the spiritual dimension of our life and of our cosmic reality, he referred to what has been a classic paradigm of this issue, the earthquake in Lisbon in 1755. And I've read references to the Lisbon earthquake in 1755 and many, many books, because it is that classic case, that case study of the relationship of God to human suffering and tragedy. And in that particular case, there is a book actually entitled The Lisbon Earthquake 1755, and there was a long quote from that book in which it indicated the fact that following that earthquake, It was necessary for those who were operating with an image of God as the sovereign ruler and governor of the universe who controls all things, it was necessary for the church to explain the devastation of that earthquake, which came as a shattering of the optimism of the 18th century. And so the explanation that was given, and I'm quoting here, the explanation that was given was that Lisbon was a very wicked city, and the earthquake was the consequence of a very angry God. And one of the more difficult dimensions of the explanation was the fact that many of the great churches of Lisbon were decimated, but there was a street with a whole row of brothels that wasn't touched. True story. And the clergy had to explain how the churches would have been devastated and took upon themselves the guilt for misusing sacred space and therefore being especially the objects of God's wrath, while God had mercy on those miserable sinners that visited the brothels. Well, I had just read that. I had just gone through that thing once again. And it was so ironic to me that that classic case coming out of the 18th century should have confronted me once again just last week at breakfast, which said to me that those are ancient questions, and that in the whole modern period that has ensued from that 18th century earthquake, with all of the knowledge that has come to light of the natural world, with all the amazing discovery of the natural sciences, which have altered totally our understanding of the landscape, the nature, the structure of reality, that we have not brought our images of God, we have not brought our conceptions of God into line with the knowledge that we have of the reality of which we're a part. We still use images from ancient cultures, ancient people's stories, and we pass them on uncritically, even though they collide with our present knowledge of the world. To reimagine God is a scary business, of course, and it's an arduous business. But once again, that question of the earthquake being raised tells me that we do operate, so many of us, so much of the time, with a worldview that has not ever been brought into relationship with the knowledge of the world as we have it and as we know it. And so, this morning, I want to begin a month's sermons on the subject of spirituality in the modern world. And by that, I really mean how one can live a vital spiritual life here and now in this world in full light of all that we know, that which will involve reimagining and calling into question many of the uncritically held presuppositions with which we operate. It's really a question of world view. Our world view is that conscious or unconsciously held big picture of things, how things are, how everything is, God, the world, human existence. The world view is the lens through which we encounter all of reality. Our world view is the unquestioned, uncritically held assumptions with which we meet everyday experience. and carry on our ordinary lives and make our judgments in this mundane day-to-day world of which we're a part. A worldview. We all have a worldview. It's not something we've arrived at critically, most likely. It is something that we have inherited, that we've picked up along the way. It's just the way we see things. We take it for granted until someone calls it in question. Until perhaps someone wonders where God is in the earthquake, and someone says, God doesn't have anything to do with earthquakes. And then we say, I've got to think that over. My point in dealing with this, let me assure you, is deeply pastoral. Finally, it is only pastoral, because my concern is that we live with integrity and with honesty, with freedom and with joy, in a vital faith posture that takes account of all of the knowledge available to us about this reality of which we're a part. But when all of the knowledge is accounted for, one is able to say, and there's something more. A worldview, that posture over against life. And the question in that worldview, is there room for God? Part of the consequence of the church not having kept up to date with the knowledge that's available to us, reconciling it then with its own faith understanding, is that there has developed in the modern world a conflict between religion and science. And as so often happens, when the church digs its heels in and becomes defensive out of the threat to its preconceived notions and ideas, on the other side, there is a hardening or simply a leaving. And what we have in our world today is a culture dominated by the academy, by the scholarly elite, that operate very largely with a naturalistic worldview in which there is no room for God. And I could give you statement after statement, clear and concise, which would indicate the worldview of the scientific naturalist or materialist, who would say that the whole of reality is what can be measured or put into a test tube or a mathematical formula. That's all there is, and there's nothing more. That has been the dominant worldview of the elite intellectual leadership of our 20th century culture in the West. And that is the consequence of a breakdown of communication and conversation, and a setting of an over against each other of those who would be people of faith, and those who would follow the scientific method with empirical verification as the only measure of what is true or real. I can remember the day in Europe when it struck me with a special clarity that the real divide in the world was not between the respective religions, but was between the religious and the atheist. Well, many of you know my story. In 1960, I came to this congregation out of seminary, the most orthodox, conservative, and evangelical graduate of the class. And I had gone through all of my education without learning. I learned the system. I came to buttress all of the presuppositions with which I began. I used whatever intellectual skill and power I had to reinforce that faith of my childhood, Sunday school, catechetical training. 4 years here, 3 years in New Jersey, pastoral situations that didn't square, that made me uncomfortable, uneasy, unable to deal honestly, forthrightly with people in the face of life, not in its joy and wonder, but in the face of its also equally horror and terror and devastation. And my trip to Europe, my study in Europe, those 4 years were really not for a degree, but because I needed to struggle with my own faith understanding. And I remember the day reading an essay by Wolfhart Pannenberg, whose theology I was studying along with Karl Barth, reading it in the heavy theological, philosophical German, trying to translate that miserable stuff. An essay in which Pannenberg laid forth the presuppositions and the consequence of atheistic naturalism. It was like I looked into a deep abyss of darkness. And I worked on that to see that that position of naturalistic atheism was a position of faith just as much as an opposing position that posited a creator God whose heart is love. And for me, that was a watershed experience. I recognized there was a fundamental worldview that is not ascertained by the scientific method, but rather is a presupposition, a predisposition, a fundamental posturing of the heart, and that the ultimate divide in the world I could see would be between those who affirmed God and those who denied that there was anything beyond this material reality of the cosmos of which we're a part. For me, that was a watershed experience, and I have struggled ever since to understand my own Christian faith in terms of that fundamental insight, coming finally to see, as you've heard me say many times, that religion is a human construct. It is our response to the ultimate, to the real, to the infinite one. The respective religions may differ from one another, but they are alike in that fundamental predisposition to believe the deep intuition of the human heart that there is something more, there is someone, that our life, our reality, is not simply free-floating, a chance occurrence, wandering willy-nilly without meaning or purpose, but that rather in the midst of this life that we share together, with all of its wonder and its glory and its miracle, its beauty, its terror and its horror, its tragedy and its suffering, its joy and its freedom, in the midst of it all, there is something more that cannot be touched put into a mathematical formula or examined in a test tube. For me, that fundamental question of worldview is the ultimate divide. And to come to understand that is then to be ready, I believe, to deal honestly with the reality of life as it presents itself to us. It is time for us to heed the voice of our dear friend Houston Smith. While we were in Florida, the book appeared, upon which he lectured here in October. What a fine, remarkable gentleman Houston Smith is. And the book reads as though he were talking to us here. And Houston Smith is a voice no longer in the wilderness, but a significant voice among others that is calling the dominant worldview of this modern age into question. That worldview that says there is this cosmic material reality and nothing more. And as he bears witness to his own faith, and as other works surrounding that are calling attention to the question of worldview, we are at a very exciting time in this whole journey of faith and faith understanding. It's a great time to be wrestling with these issues and to come to see that our worldview that has room for God is a worldview that can stand with integrity and honesty in the arena, in the marketplace of ideas. There are some things I think that we have to acknowledge in the church, and that is that our images of God portray a God too small. J.B. Phillips wrote that book years and years ago. The title itself says it all. Your God is too small. God is not a God of earthquakes. I had thought about the question before the question was posed to me, as I'm sure you had, as you see the tragedy written across the face of a mother who's praying for her child trapped inside. I would pray too, of course. It's the emotional, instinctual response of the human heart. But I know that the finger of God does not hold up the floor, the concrete slab of a story of a flat to give breathing room to a child. The reality with which we live teaches us, if we have eyes to see and ears to hear, that there is a world out there that meets us, which runs on its way according to its course, according to its forms and structures. And we have to grow up and become mature and face the reality of the cosmos without a God who fixes things. That's not to say that prayer is not effective and doesn't affect things in the material world, the physical body or whatever. I don't want to get into that. But I want to say this morning, if we're going to be spiritually alive with a vital faith in the modern world with integrity, there are images of God that simply won't work anymore. And it's high time that people in my position are honest with you about that. We know in this congregation all too recently that cancer grows in saintly persons, and infection rages in the best of us until it kills. And we know that we are all subject to all of the vicissitudes of the human condition. God not picking one here and letting one off here. That's not the way it is. And if we're honest with our human experience, we know that. And it's time that we think together about how we can re-image God in light of all the knowledge we know of the world of which we're a part. But thank God for someone of the credential of a Houston Smith who can look the most erudite scientists in the world and call them to account. To say to them, when you have said all you can say, when you have told us all you can tell us, you haven't told us all there is. For there is more. There's room for God in a worldview purged of ancient fantasy and honest to today's knowledge. And then I think we have to let science tell us about our world. And we have to find God here and now in the celebration of life, in its beauty and its terror, in its triumph and in its tragedy, where flowers grow on manure heaps and cancer grows on beautiful bodies, in a world where children are born and sit here this morning and are baptized with all of the wonderful potential, and where earthquakes wipe out thousands. See, that's life. And God doesn't play favorites, fix things, pull strings, shift gears. But God is, and God is with us. And God is experienced in those thin places of our human experience and that deep intuition within us that longs, yea, knows something more. That is the spiritual dimension that is a part of a worldview that has room for God. And to be able to live honestly before the face of God in the light of everything we know, and to celebrate and to know joy and freedom. That is to be fully alive by God.